Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome back. Simon here. Now, I was fortunate enough to be invited onto the Healing Place podcast recently with Meeta Mistry, author, therapist, and columnist, to talk about my book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. I really enjoyed speaking with Meeta, and so I'm sharing our conversation here. I hope you enjoy listening.
I've just finished reading listening to Champion Thinking, your book, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself, and I love how you've used sport as a metaphor for life to find joy and peace. And we'll talk more about this, but first, how are you?
Well, thank you very much for having me, Meeta. It's a pleasure. We've obviously exchanged a few messages on social media, and it's always nice to connect properly. You know, I'm a big fan of that. I prefer talking to typing. So lovely to see you. Thanks very much for the invite. I'm not too bad. I did the Today program yesterday, so I was up at 4, and I'm always a bit knackered the next day. So if I look a bit baggy under the eyes, that's
you
why.
Look great.
Please. But I'm fine. Thank
Good.
You. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And likewise, thank you so much for coming on. I'm a fan of your podcast, the Life Lessons podcast.
Bless
as
you.
Well. So it's always great to meet and chat with people, like you say. So going back to Twitter, a few months ago, you tweeted that you'd heard a great definition of success, that having your kids still wanting to hang out with you when they're grown up is a measure of success. And that really resonated with me because my children are 20 and 16 and yes,
Stop
they
it.
Are.
They no are. Way.
They are. And I love that they still want to holiday with us, but that's a lovely measure of success, but not something that we would equate to success because that's not what society pushes. It's all about numbers and status, and especially with sport, which is what you're big on, it's all about the results. So what does success look like for you?
Great question. And yeah, I love that way of measuring it because what more could you want, right? I think, to be a bit morbid, if you imagine a funeral, no one talks about the achievements necessarily that someone has or the car they drove or the size of their house. It's what they would like, and who better to know you than your own kids. And so, yeah, I think that is a good measure. So how would I define it? I think I would define it as the degree to which one can find peace within oneself and recognize that we are intrinsically enough. We come into the world intrinsically enough. More often than not, we lose touch with that and then go off in a search for that in the world, only to be, of course, destined never to find it because it's not out there. But to get back into or to recognize that we are intrinsically enough and so is everyone else, and then to express that in how we relate and what we do. So that therefore means compassion, empathy, doing work, for example, that is aligned with, ideally aligned with this recognition. And so that comes back to, you know, your kids, is that if your kids want to spend time with you when they're older, when they have a choice, that means there's love and care there. And so that is a reflection of that attitude and outlook. So yeah, I think it's about kindness, empathy, and compassion outwardly, and peace inwardly, and expressing that as best we can.
I love that, because those are very difficult to measure, those soft qualities, and it's something that often is seen as a weakness in society, talking about your vulnerabilities or being empathetic or compassionate is not necessarily seen as a measure of success. And like you say, it is a beautiful thing. So yeah, thanks for that. So in your book, you have interviewed a lot of elite athletes, and I've obviously read it and I found it very interesting. And I'd like to really explore, when you've spoken to athletes who've won gold medals or they're at the top of their game, how does that external success compare with the sort of internal fulfillment? What have you noticed?
Well, I think that's the crux really of the book, and also the crux of the message that I'm trying to get out there. And it actually still relates to your first question around how we judge success, because I agree with you, it does tend to be around numbers and status and achievement and approval and accumulation. Those, I mean, you just have to look at the way we judge as a country, it's GDP. Mm-hmm. So it is this very narrow way of looking at things. And I think that sport is a good metaphor for life. And I think an important thing to say around the book is that sport is just a window into these broader themes. It's not about sport. It's about exactly what we're talking about here, really. It's just that I think sport, it's heightened. It's a really good way of looking at these themes and these subjects that really are universal. So what I would say is that we all have this view, or we're conditioned to have this view, that we will be happy and fulfilled when X happens. And that X may be the house, the relationship, the job, the promotion, retirement, the money, whatever it may be. But it's all at some point in the future. And that is heightened in sport, because the rewards can be so big. An Olympic gold medal is, you know, a pretty special thing. A World Cup is very special. And yet, the number of people I've spoken to and am aware of more broadly through research who have achieved their ultimate goals only to be left with a feeling of unfulfillment and even emptiness, it's just so common. An example I give in the book is Johnny Wilkinson, who was BBC Sports Personality of the Year in 2003. He basically won England the Rugby World Cup. Really interesting guy, because when he was 7 or 8, he set 2 goals, very lofty goals, and those were to become the best rugby player in the world and to win a World Cup. And he ticked them both off at the age of 24. Mm. And so that's like a truncated version of what we all, in a way, aspire to. Oh, listen, when I get this certain amount of money, live in this certain house, whatever it may be, then I'll be okay. So we're always postponing happiness. So he did it, but in his case, it just happened at a really early time. And it was November 2003, I think it was, and he won the World Cup. And the very next day, he woke up and he said, I've never felt so empty. Wow. And so he was faced with this truism that achievement and success is not going to give me what I really want. Now, he kind of went into denial about that for a while. But you know, a seed was sown that took some time to bear fruit. And so to bring it back to just more broadly, I would say that we can definitively say that success, as most people would probably define it these days, the sort of things you know you read about the entrepreneurs, the high performers, all that stuff. Success as measured in that way is not synonymous with what I argue we really want, which is to feel that internal contentment and peace and then express it outwardly. So we can definitively say that, because if success was synonymous with that thing, then everyone would feel this lasting fulfillment when they achieved it, but they don't. In fact, the number who don't is quite staggering. So that means that we're looking in the wrong place. We've got it wrong. You know, this kind of, oh, I'll be okay when, is just, it's a trap. It's the classic sort of hamster wheel trap. And so in the book, what I try and do is explore, okay, where then should we be looking? And perhaps we can get onto that. But just to answer you this question, I think it's so important for people to see that I'll be happy when X, particularly in terms of success, is an illusion and a dangerous one. And it can keep you from postponing being okay and recognizing that we're already enough. And the beauty of this moment, because this is the now, this moment is the only moment we ever experience, we can miss that, actually, in many cases, for a whole lifetime. We can postpone it for a lifetime, and then we run out of time only to realize that, you know, we've been chasing an illusion the whole time. And I think that's such an important recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that, because if you're constantly striving towards a future goal or a future illusion, you're kind of missing the present moment and all the gifts and the gratitude. All of those things that are happening seem to pass you by because you're so busy thinking about the next thing that you've got to do. Actually, life's just happening and you've missed it.
Absolutely.
And also to strive, yeah. When you're striving, a lot of it, you're often in your head a lot of the time as well. I don't know how it is for athletes, if that's the same. Is that something that you discovered with them when you were talking to them?
Well, I mean, the future only exists in our head. Mm. That's the thing. You know, the future is a thought. No one's ever experienced the future. No one's ever experienced the past. We only ever experience now, and then the future and the past appear as thoughts now. So it has to be, by definition, we have to be in our head to, you know, if we're constantly striving to the next thing, because, again, it doesn't exist anywhere but there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so absolutely, that's what I've noticed with people who would be in a state of anxiety about, oh my goodness, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens in this big stakes, supposedly big stakes tournament or event? But, you know, I'm reminded of conversations I have with my eldest daughter frequently, and she's like, oh, you know, I'm worried about school tomorrow, or this is worrying me, that's worrying me. And invariably I'll be talking to her while she's, you know, in bed. And I'd just always say to her, okay, where are you now? I'm in bed. Is there anything wrong now? No, invariably there's not. And I just try and bring her back to that present moment. And then what makes me laugh, and she's now wised up to it, but, and then she'll go to, say, school, and the thing that was worrying her, I'll wait till I pick her up and ask her, I say, how was that thing that was worrying you? And invariably, it's never as bad. Mm-hmm. The present is never as bad as we imagine it's going to be, because obviously we can't do anything about something that we imagine, because it's not actually happening. But when something actually happens, we are then equipped to deal with it. And I always ask her, you know, how was it? And she started to sort of smile and cotton on to the fact that I'm pointing out that it's never as bad as she thinks it's going to be, you know, and that's the story. Like, our mind just, our thoughts and mind just keep us sort of trapped in this way. So yeah, I think this continual striving, it is problematic. Look, we have to set goals and we have to try and achieve things, because we've all got bills to pay and we've all got gifts to express and everything like that. But like you said about the present moment, you know, we miss so much. I we've got a baby as well at the moment. We've got a 9-month-old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's also why
don't have that.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. It's my wife who has.
Now.
Yeah, no. No, I don't mean that meanly. I mean that with empathy.
I empathise. I've been there. I know what it's like.
I'm sure.
But it does get better.
I know. I know. I know. I know, right? That's why I said this too shall pass, which is another important insight. So yesterday I took our baby out for a walk in the pram, and there's a little park near us, and it's on a slight hill, and there's a path running up the right-hand side. And it's probably about a 200-meter long park that I just walked up and back for an hour and a quarter. And I was trying to do like a bit of a walking meditation. So I was trying to just bring my attention to and my awareness to the sensations of my feet on the floor. And obviously then I'd go up into my head and then I'd bring it back and go up into my head and I'd bring it back. But what I noticed was, and I always notice this when I do things like this, is just the magic that is just around in the simplest things. You can hear the birds, you know, making their noise, making the bird song, and the feeling of the wind on your face. Perhaps some, you know, I noticed some flowers starting to bloom, and people playing and dogs running. And there's so much incredible stuff that we become immune to because we get trapped into this, you know, make believe, I've got to achieve X, Y, Z. But actually, you know, if we can rediscover that innocent wonder that children and babies have, then we can reconnect with, you know, the real magic of life. You know, I will wrap this answer up in 1 second. I just want to add one more thing, which is that I was I'm long-winded, I warn you. which is that I was getting a train recently, and I recorded a little video, ironically, about how you look down the platform and 90% at least the people are just heading their phones. And I was stood there, it was a lovely day, and I'm looking up and you look out the blue sky and you sort of ponder that and think, okay, well, as far as we know, that sky goes on and on and on, perhaps to infinity, right? So that's pretty big. And then, as I said, there's the sounds and the sensations and all this stuff. And if we knew it was our last day on Earth, all of a sudden we'd wake up to this, my Lord, what have I been missing? And so I think that's it. It's the miracle of the ordinary.
Absolutely.
That is so important.
I love that. And it is about finding those little moments and just being really present and noticing, you know, the change in season. And sometimes I do come onto Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and I post a photo of a blossom or a sunset. You know, knowing that it's going to fall on deaf ears because everybody's like scrolling and looking at the fear-based news and all those sort of stories. But yeah, you know, it's nice to know that there are other people who appreciate those little gifts in life as well.
Every moment is as important and as special as the next one, you know. And so in sport, obviously, there are these heightened moments. Or in life, maybe it's a party, maybe it's whatever it may be, wedding, whatever, right? But it's all just happening now. And so every moment is as valuable as every other moment. And so, again, just to like quote Johnny Wilkinson, he spoke about winning the World Cup, but he spoke about now he understands that he can have that same, not necessarily level of heightened emotion, but that same level of engagement in washing dishes. And I love that. Is that, you know, if we realize that every moment is as valuable as every other moment, there are invariably going to be ups and downs, okay? And instead of resisting the downs, recognize, well, there could easily be nothing. Like, it's the miracle of existence. Then even the downs become like, okay, in some way, like pretty wonderful because it's just all part of this rich tapestry of life. You can't have an up without a down, a left without a right, etc. And so it's full, as we all fall foul of this, I certainly do, but as fully engaged in this moment as possible. When you're walking to have a shower, just walk. When you're having a shower, just shower. When you're eating, eat. When you're talking, truly talk, etc. But every moment is so valuable, and it's really important not to miss that.
I love that. And that leads on very nicely to this whole concept of acceptance and something you write about as well in your book. And I loved how you used the story of Henry Fraser, and he came to this level of acceptance after some adversity. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story?
Sure. So Henry's this amazing young guy, and he was a good athlete when he was growing up, but he was also, he was a good rugby player. He was, he also admitted to being quite anxious and would turn down opportunities. I remember I think he had to give a presentation at school and he faked illness so he wouldn't have to stand up in front of class and whatever else. And he was always imagining the worst case scenario. What if this goes wrong? What if that goes wrong? Except when he was about, I think, 19, I can't remember exactly, but he went on holiday with his friends. So carefree, goes to have a dip in the sea, dives in head first into a sandbank, breaks his neck, and he's then paralyzed for the neck down. And obviously, awful, awful experience, terrible, terrible time for him and his family, you know, for the next however many months, an absolute minimum. And there was this key moment where he was in the hospital and he'd been inside for 3-4 months. And finally, he was able to get into this wheelchair and he was going to go outside to be able to get some light. And he got in this wheelchair and he went outside and he was like, oh, I feel so good to be in the light and to feel, you know, the sun on my skin and etc. But as he was coming back in the wheelchair, back into the hospital, he passed by these big double doors and he saw his reflection. And when he saw his reflection, he couldn't believe what he saw, because he'd been this young, strapping, athletic kid who was muscular and physical and et cetera. And what he saw staring back at him was he'd lost so much weight and muscle, and, you know, his head was having to be held in place. And that, I think, was the moment when he really realized that the predicament he was in, and it caused this absolute torrent of emotion in him. And he went back to his room and was just, you know, inconsolable, just crying and crying and crying. Just, you can just imagine the depths of the pain he must have been feeling at that point. And he was with his mum and he said this really moving comment that, you know, he's with his mum and he just wanted to reach out and be able to hug his mum and he couldn't even do that. Yeah, you can't imagine how painful that would be. And he was on sleep medication, his family had to leave, but the sleep medication didn't work and he was just crying and crying and crying. And then it got to about 3-4 in the morning, and suddenly, boom, it was like the storm clouds cleared and he had this recognition that, okay, this is my predicament. There's no point resisting it. I've got to accept it. And obviously he'd had to experience all that grief and all those feelings in this truncated period of time. Because you didn't, obviously, and actually it wasn't like that was it, but that was a big part of it. And from that point, he was then able to recognize this is where I'm at. So I have to accept it. And now I respond. Okay, now what do I do? This is where I'm at. Now what do I do? And he then set to work in terms of working to be able to breathe without having to, you know, have a machine to help him breathe. And let's say there was, I think it was 18 months perhaps that they expected him to be able to, if he worked hard, to get out of hospital. And he managed to get out in half the time because he worked so hard at it. Yeah, really remarkable. But then the amazing thing about Henry's story is that after that, his life has just unrolled in this like incredible way. He went on, he's gone and given public talks. He's become a public speaker. Took up mouth painting when he was bored, and his paintings are incredible. If you check out his website, they're amazing, remarkable. Yeah. And there's now a West End play about it called, I think it's called the Little Big Things. And it's about how he's able to find so much joy. And so the fascinating thing about Henry is that he talks about exactly what we spoke about before. You know, he'll have a cup of tea and that is this precious moment that he really engages with. And so he's become so adept at recognizing these beautiful moments that are around us all the time, instead of always trying to become. He's, you know, as I said, he's a public speaker, which was something he would have never dreamt of. And so the paradox, the irony, or the the reassuring thing is that he is a much more confident and satisfied and fulfilled and almost enlightened young man after his accident than he was before. And obviously our mind rushes to judgments. This is the point of this chapter. Our mind rushes to judgments about this event is good or bad, but we can never really know. And what might seem like bad may end up being the best thing that happened to us and vice versa. You know, be careful what you wish for. We just don't know. And also we don't know what's going to happen. You know, whoever has a 5-year plan, there's a saying, if you want to make God laugh, make plans, is we don't actually know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. And so it's being open to that. And then later in the book, I get into the how of acceptance, because I think people think of acceptance as something you do. And actually, I think it's something you stop doing in terms of resisting. And it's about allowing and letting go as opposed to like a active process. But yeah, Henry's a remarkable guy, an amazing story, and just such a moving story, but a testament to the power of acceptance and just the human spirit.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I found that really inspiring, but also that we have very little control. And when we accept that, or like you say, let go of controlling, then life is more likely to feel a bit freer and fulfilling. And that's what came through a lot through reading the book. I found that really intriguing. And just going back to our thoughts, and our thoughts are not our facts, I love how you used Will Carling's story to demonstrate how we're very quick to rush to judgment about somebody. We see success and we see people who are at the tip of the iceberg, and we just assume that they've got all this wealth, this status. And he was actually somebody who was vilified by the media as well. But actually, his story wasn't understood. And that's something that you found when you interviewed. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, what you discovered there? Because that was really fascinating.
Yeah. So Will was a bit of a hero of mine when I was growing up. And like you say, you know, we put the people in the public eye, we can't help but form a conceptual idea about them based on, you know, brief, perhaps, appearances in the press. Certainly in those days, it would be press conferences, interviews in the media, then, you know, interpretations from journalists. But invariably, the view we have of people is very shallow. And so in Will's case, he was England captain. And so a lot of England fans saw him as a hero. And he had, you know, he was, I hate to use the word, but I'm going to do it, had smoke blown up.
Yeah.
Finish the rest of the sentence, right? And then Celtic nations in particular, so my father's Scottish, saw him as a personification of English arrogance. And obviously neither of them were true. And then, as you said, he was vilified because at the end of his career, there was various things in his private life that sort of spilled out, and the press just went for him, you know, which happens so often where public opinion shifts. And so then he, a lot of people then, even the English people, the English fans stopped seeing him as this hero and just saw him as this cad. And what I found was that when I interviewed him, again, actually, having gone through this experience where he had been vilified, actually was good for him. It made him question things. And he said quite an interesting comment that, because he had a testimonial at the end of his career where he would have earned a vast amount of money, but it was cancelled due to a lack of public demand because of him being described as a pariah inside and outside the game. And he said, you know, in a way, even though I lost a lot of money, I look back and if I had had that testimonial, maybe I would have thought, gosh, I really am special. And I really noticed this with high profile people, is that it's difficult not to fall for that illusion, because you do have people who treat you differently, who treat you in a certain way. But it is an illusion. Just because you're perhaps good at a thing that is happens to be celebrated, kicking a ball or whatever it may be, that doesn't make that you yourself are special. You know, if I actually think of my own life, so I'm a Wimbledon television reporter, and so, you know, that's a relatively high status job at Wimbledon, but my first ever job at Wimbledon, I used to take out the rubbish. Now, I wasn't treated in the same way then, let me tell you. But am I any more valuable or different now? No, of course not. I'm exactly the same person. It's just the perception and the outward that is different. And so I think it's so important to see through this kind, these, I call them mental hierarchy, status hierarchies, where we tend to put people on pedestals and believe that they are special or not special. And I argue that really there's no reason to treat anyone differently, whatever they do. You know, if I'm interviewing a big name, why should I treat them differently as if they're special compared to, and this is no judgment on these jobs, but let's say someone who's serving me in a restaurant or behind or at a shop. You know, people are just people. And I think, and I actually, I use the story of a Zen parable of a monk called Kazan in it, who I think it was a call to officiate at a like a royal event, but he noticed that when the royalty were coming, he had sweaty palms, and he recognized then he still saw this person as being special, and so he quit and said, I've still got work to do, and he went back, and then he returned 5 years later enlightened and saw the innate sameness in people. And I think that's, for me, a really important thing is this recognition that no matter what we do or achieve or don't achieve, that actually, you know, at our fundamental core, we're no better or worse than anyone else. And I think if we can recognize that and act in accordance with that, then, you know, the world would be a better place, but we tend to be happier, you know. And that's an expression, as I said at the start, of that kind of loving recognition that I'm enough, you're enough, everyone's enough. And come at it from that level, as opposed to, oh no, I've achieved X, therefore I'm more special than you, and will treat you in that way, which is a conceptual trap that we do tend to fall for.
Absolutely, and I love that level of humility. You know, fundamentally, we're all the same, skin, bones, blood, feel the same emotions. We'll have different experiences navigating through life, but fundamentally, at the core, we are the same, and we are all enough. I love that. That's really lovely. So where do we get this inner contentment then, Simon?
Okay, I'm going to get a bit deep here.
That's good.
So I hope that's right,
really,
Mita.
We like deep, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so we've already established that success is not synonymous with fulfillment and happiness. And let's just agree, for the sake of argument, that what we want is the happiness and the fulfillment. It's just, how do we go about getting that? Some people might think it's money, power, whatever. Anyway, but what we really want is to feel a lasting sense of inner fulfillment. Okay, so where is that? Okay, well, it's not out there. Yes, certain experiences might make us feel higher briefly, but then obviously if we go up, it has to come down. We know that experience. You go to a party, the next day you don't feel great. The party was great, so what goes up must come down. So what we're talking about isn't that level of that kind of pleasure or happiness in that sense. We're talking about a lasting sense of okay, enough, I can enjoy this moment just as it is. Right, well, so I talk about this at the end of the book, and it is a little challenging, but in sport there's the experience of being in flow. So when people are in flow, then, and we can all relate to this, by the way, but in sport, it's heightened. So when we're in flow, it's the state at which we feel and perform at our best. And so I always think of Roger Federer, you know, in full flow. It's it's a blissful experience for him as a player, but also as the viewer, because time ceases to be a thing at that point. You're so engrossed and engaged with the moment. And so what happens during flow is two really important things. One, time distorts. And we are all, again, familiar with that. We know that experience of, you might have a conversation that you're so engaged with, and you look at the time. Goodness, is that the time? You know, an hour has gone by in what feels like 5 minutes. And you've got kids. We know the opposite as well. That thing where they're sat in the back of the car going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Right? So time can distort according to our, how in line with the moment we are. So, and the thing is, like, when time distorts, that has another knock-on effect. So another characteristic of being in flow is that our sense of self disappears. So, okay, what does that mean? Right. Well, it means that we're so engaged with the moment. We're so at one with the moment. We're so lost in the moment that we're not thinking about the past or the future. Now, if we're not thinking about the past, our identity can't stand. Because how we find our identity is in reference to what's gone before. Like right at this very moment, it's just you and me talking. Now, if I stopped and you said, okay, tell me about yourself, I might say, okay, well, I've done this, I've done that. You know, I'm a broadcaster, I do some stuff for the BBC, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that kind of stuff. I believe this, I think that. Well, that's all based on conditioning that's happened in the past. And so when thoughts of the past and the future drop away, so does our conceptual identity. So this sort of sense of me, and we're all familiar with, we all tend to view life through the prism of me. Like, how does this affect me? How does this impact me? Is this going to be good for me? Is this going to be bad for me? Is this going to reflect well on me? It's all me, 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 me. But that me itself is just a thought. And then we have various other things based on stuff. So even, let's say, I'm a broadcaster. Well, what does that mean? Yeah. Okay, it means something, right? It does mean something. It means that sometimes I walk in somewhere and get paid sometimes to talk when someone does something with a microphone. But it doesn't. It's really just a thought that represents something. It's not actually real on its own. And that's the same as true of if I was to think of myself, I'm unworthy. Let's say, let's take that. You know, a lot of belief that many of us have, or I'm unlovable, or the opposite, I'm special. Yeah. Again, just thoughts. These are just thoughts and ideas that we take to be true. Even, right, I'm British or I'm English. Like, what does that mean? Right, countries are just made up, right? They stem from conversations, and we agree on their definition, and then we take them to be real. A good example, I think, is the equator. Think of the equator. Right? Go try find the equator. It ain't there. You know, it's just a useful idea. Right? And the same is true for all these things. And so, but we take our thoughts, particularly about ourselves, around this idea of me, to be very, very serious. And, you know, and often that can be very traumatic for people if they have a belief of I'm not lovable, and then they'll act in accordance with that. But so to come back to my original thing is that when we're in flow, we're so engaged with the moments that the thoughts drop away that our identity drops away. And so when I spoke to a lot of sports people, a lot of them spoke in the same vein about this experience. So Johnny Wilkinson, when he kicked the winning drop goal, he said, it wasn't me kicking it, it was a knowing of it. Right. Emma Raducanu, when she won the US Open, she was like, oh, I was so in the moment. It was like my body was just acting on its own. When Frankie Dettori won seven races in a day, and the last one was an absolute dud and no hoper, and he ended up winning on it. And he said it was very strange. It was like I was there, but I wasn't there. Damon Hill, a similar thing. So I've got all these examples of it, and they all talk in similar ways of like being there but not being there. But how can that be true? Well, I would say what that suggests is that there's the part of us that is just is and is aware. Okay, so this is where it gets a little complicated. Well, it's not actually complicated at all, but it's just we're not used to speaking or considering in this terms, because a useful thing to introduce just at this point is to recognize the difference. This was something that was introduced to me that had a massive impact, was the difference between the thinking mind and the aware mind. So the thinking mind is that bit I've talked about, is the thing that goes, okay, oh, this is a bottle, or this is good, this is bad, I don't like this, oh, I forgot to do that, whatever. So we are all familiar with that, the voice in our head that just chunters on the whole time, and we tend to identify with that. But actually, there's a part of us that is aware of that thinking mind. It has to be, because the thoughts come and go, and it's like we hear them, we're aware of them. And so this aware mind, which is, like I say, the way I use it, I think it's a bit more easy to get your head around. Aware mind, awareness, whatever you want to call it, that is there prior to the thoughts, the thinking mind, prior to our feelings. There's something there that is aware of them. And when we're in the flow, that, because the thoughts and the feelings drop away, this background aware mind, aware presence, awareness is allowed to come to the foreground. It basically shines. And I would say that this aware mind is intrinsically peaceful and fulfilled and enough. And you only have to look at babies and cats to recognize the truth in this. So as I said, we've got a baby, and you know, they're so present. They haven't got an idea about themselves. They're not like, oh, I'll be, you know, goodness, I'll be okay when I do this job or I achieve this. It's like, no. They're so fully engaged with the moment that's so there's no question in their mind or in our mind of them that they're enough. It's not even a question. And it's only when this sort of thinking mind develops and we start thinking, you know, this is good about me, or there's a comparison, all that stuff, that we lose touch with that. Same is true of my cats. Yeah. My cats are, you know, never question whether they're enough. I can see it. They're perfectly, they're just in the moment, and they're perfectly okay. And so when we're in flow, this becomes revealed. This enoughness becomes revealed, that is at the core of all of us. And the mistake we make is that we then tend to associate it with whatever's triggered it.
Right.
So in the case of sport, it would be the trophy, the goal, whatever it may be. It might be in falling in love. It might be the conversation. Now, that's not to say that there's anything wrong in these things, because they're kind of portals into this. But the fact that the experience of happiness and peace is the same, but the ways we experience it differs by person to person, suggests it's not the thing itself. It's just revealing what's already there. And so what I would say is, okay, yes, it's all well and good talking about flow in sport, or when you're playing a musical instrument, as is the case with my wife, or anything like that. That's all well and good. And I do think there is value in finding activities that enable us to lose ourselves. You know, it can be as simple as reading or conversation or listening to music, comedy, whatever, right? There is value in that. But I think even more value is in recognizing that the thoughts we have about ourselves around this me are not true. Or they're not us, they're pointers. And that who we really are at a fundamental, the core of us is this aware presence that is there prior to the thoughts, prior to the feelings. That is, you know, my baby isn't thinking and talking right now. And so it's just there. It's very obvious that it's there. And the more that we can then, I think, become aware of this aware mind, which is hard because the mind itself can't do it. You've got to you've got to drop out of the mind, which is the essence of mindfulness. Then I think if the more we become aware of awareness or the aware mind, its innate peace and enoughness starts to shine more in our experience. Now, I understand that can be a little complicated for some people, because we're so used to looking for things with the mind, with thoughts and identifying with it, that we miss this awareness, this aware mind, this consciousness, whatever you want to call it, this presence, this enoughness that is there before the mind. But if we start to notice it, it goes from being invisible to subtle to obvious. And the peace that is inherent in it starts to become more obvious in our life. And then, as I said, we then can start to seek to express that as opposed to search for it.
Yeah. Do you understand?
Does that make sense?
It does totally. It really reminds me of the Buddhist concept of no mind, where you're completely in the moment. There's no judgment. There's no preconceived ideas. There's a full openness and curiosity. And you're able to sort of let go of the past thoughts of yourself or beliefs and of the future. So you're not striving. You're just simply being. And I know I certainly feel like I'm in the flow when I'm podcasting and you're editing and you're like, whoa, that's been 4 hours of editing and it felt like 5 minutes and I'm clearly enjoying it. So it is finding those activities where you talked about time just seems to stop, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, time's a funny old thing, isn't it? Because without necessarily talking science or even philosophy, like it's always now. Mm. It's always now. So we only ever experience time through inference, through looking in the mirror or memory or this kind of thing. We never actually directly experience it. So it is a funny thing, but absolutely, you know, and you mentioned on the Buddhist thing, just quickly on that, the core recognition of the Buddha was around no self, which is no me. Seeing through this idea of ourselves that we cling to and defend. We defend, you know, our opinions on stuff. You see people have an opinion about politics or a football team, and they fight about this. So they're fighting about an idea, about a thought, right? And, you know, it's a kind of insanity. And is this recognition, as the Buddha pointed out, of no self, of hang on, this, what we're fighting and defending, there's nothing actually real and tangible there. Not to say that it's not important, let's say, to navigate the social world. We do live in, you know, in a human world where we interact in this way, but there is something that's there before that, and the more we get in touch with that, the more peace we will experience, I would suggest.
Love that. So what do you do when you're in the flow? What activities are you engaging in?
Well, it used to be tennis. I'm like you, I love podcasting. I mean, I love chats, right? When people email me, if they've got a phone number, I hate emails. I'm rubbish at them. I can't write a good email for my wife's got a real flair for it. I'm an R over each sentence. So if they've got a number there, I'll just tend to ring people. And actually a lot of opportunities I've created in that way. But the same when I go out, it drives my wife crazy. I'm talking to the waiters. I just chat to people. And so or in the supermarket, just brief encounters, brief moments of connection. Like that for me is like energizing and like I love it. So obviously a podcast conversation that says it's an hour or a good conversation is an hour or longer through to these sort of micro moments of connection. So that's definitely one way I get it. Like I said, tennis has definitely been that throughout my life, less so now with slightly dodgy back from writing the book and from having a baby. But
did you have the baby?
But I'll come back to that. No, yeah.
You mean picking the baby up by changing nappies?
It was actually more the writing the book, just being sat for too long and then just getting a bit older, I suppose. But I don't mean to complain. I'm back fighting fit, and like you said, my wife deserves all the credit. But then actually, simple things like reading. I love like that's a really sacred time for me. Is the last half hour of the day in bed. I love to read in bed, and you know, I lose myself in what I'm reading. And it's just a very peaceful time, and even sleep. But for me, I got to say, like I said about walking my daughter up and down this 200 meter path for an hour and a quarter. And I really enjoy doing that because just whenever I notice I'm lost in thought or lost in anything, as soon as I notice it, I drop out of it. And then in that moment, I'm back in that aware mind.
Yeah.
And it's not something really tangible because it doesn't have objective qualities. It doesn't have a start and an end like a thought or a feeling, but you just start to become more familiar with its quality. And so I really enjoy just throughout the day, I'm lost in thinking about the past, future, and then just come back to now. You can see here. And so there are all these little micro ways in and macro ways in. But
No, I love that. And I think that's so important to sort of check in every now and then and say, my thoughts are taken away, or just allow yourself 10 minutes of worry time or thinking time. That's what I do. I say, right, I'm having a timer, so I'm going to only allow 10 minutes to think about this thing that's bugging me. And then I switch it over and shift my mind, go out for a walk or do something completely different like you do. And we recently had another guest on, Jonathan Hoban, who does walking therapy, and he's very big about getting people out walking side by side and talking. So I think this whole thing about walking and getting outdoors is incredible, just to shift your perspective and switch from that totally thinking agree. Mind to being, because that's what you want to do. You want to be being and feeling rather than thinking all the time, because that's just so exhausting.
Do you know what? I'm glad you used the word being, because that's another way of saying the aware mind or consciousness or awareness, whatever. It's you can't really put it in words, and that's the challenge. So being, just being, you know, if you're just there and just being, that is another way of putting it. And yeah, we're such a species, particularly in the West, of doing and striving and achieving. And actually that being is getting back familiar with just being, and that's enough.
Love it. Brilliant. So before we say goodbye, is there anything you'd like to share with the listeners, perhaps about their definition of success? What tip would you give to them about not buying into that narrative that we're fed, or just anything you'd like to share?
Okay. I'll share a couple of things that have been really powerful for me. One is just to notice that you're not your thoughts, but you're aware of your thoughts. I think that for me is one of the most important insights you can possibly have. And so therefore, it doesn't really matter what your thoughts are saying. If they're saying you're bad or good, you just, a thought is a thought irrespective of its content. And that gives you a lot of freedom. So that's point number one. And number two would be to live as if time doesn't exist when you can. As you've said, we spend so much time in the past and the future, but if you sort of let go of this idea of time, however you want to do it, pretend it doesn't exist, whatever, right? Whatever works for you, but act as if time doesn't exist. So the only thing that exists is this moment, and be as engaged as you can in this moment, whatever you happen to be doing, whether you want to do it or not. Don't see this moment as a stepping stone to a future moment. Try and sort of just act as if time doesn't exist. And that to me is a really powerful practice, because, you know, it's you can come back to the safety in many ways of this moment, because this moment invariably is not as bad as one we imagine in the future or one we regret in the past. This moment right now is fine. So those are the two things I'd say. And then apart from that, I would just say, you know, if anything I've said resonates, then check out the Life Lessons podcast. I've got a YouTube channel where we really kind of go deeper into the deep stuff. And then obviously the book, it's called Champion Thinking, but the subtitle is more important, is How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. And that without losing yourself is the essence of exactly what we've been speaking about. And then, like I said, I love connection. So just get in touch, because I invariably end up calling people back and speaking to people. And, you know, always love connecting. You know, as I said, it's one of my great joys in life. So if anyone wants to get in touch, feel
Brilliant.
Free.
Brilliant. I love that. And actually, I love your podcast, and that's how we actually connected. So yeah, I will be checking that out in the latest episode. So thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we could have carried on for another hour or so at least.
A massive thank you to Meet a Mystery for having me on the Healing Place podcast. Please do check it out. It's a cracking listen, and she is a wonderful and warm host. And thanks to everyone who's got in touch with me recently via my website, simonmundy.com, or at Simon Mundy on social media. Do keep them coming.
Small details are big surfaces. tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.